The word of God is alive and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of the soul and the spirit and of the joints and the marrow, and is a critic of thoughts and intents of the heart. All scripture is God-breathed and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God might be mature, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. Study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Open the word of truth this morning to Ecclesiastes chapter 6, where we are ready to resume with verse 3. All right, as James instructs the believers under his charge, let every man be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger, recognizing that the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God, and that ultimately we are to receive the implanted word. That is my job as the pastor, is to consistently implant the word into your soul, to write on the tablets of your heart with the pen of doctrine. That is why we are here, and that is the purpose of the ministry, ultimately for you to gain eternal glory and to maximize in phase three, getting your crown, the greatest gift of all, the greatest achievement and accomplishment of all, and all the SG3 that you can manage to accumulate along the way. So in order to do this, we recognize we have to function according to God's will. We have to function according to the precepts of doctrine. And that is why we are here, of course, is to learn these things. So it's time to make sure you're in fellowship, to rebound if necessary, to put aside the sin nature, and do anything else you might need to do to focus your attention, concentrate, so you can profit from the teaching. Let us pray. Well, Heavenly Father, we thank you for the opportunity we have once again to gather together to pursue the things of doctrine, recognizing that these things are eternal. These are the principles that guide life and that ultimately can bring us to a successful conclusion in the angelic conflict. We recognize that the pitfalls are many, that the casualties have been many, but that through your grace, each one of us can continue to pursue the agenda of your plan and fulfill our eternal destiny by living according to your eternal standards. We pray as we approach your word this morning that God the Holy Spirit will bless our thinking and continue to guide us in all the truth, for we ask it in Christ's name. Amen. All right, Solomon is now moving into a different sort of situation, a hypothetical here, but one that we would suspect people have thought about before, having dealt with the two types of individuals, both of whom God has blessed with the details of life. And all those things, but one enjoys them and one does not. Now he moves into a situation that he considers to be another misery in this world, that people live life, go through their lives, however many years they may have, and don't ultimately really enjoy it, are not satisfied with what they have, and of course at the end of it all lose everything anyway. So if a man, here, verse 3, fathers 100 children and lives many years. Hypothetical particle here, if. A man, a specific, again, he individualizes this, I-Y-S-H, a particular man. If a man, an individual, and again here, although he specifies male, the idea here would be a male simply because he's dealing with the prosperity, sexual prosperity, but clearly the same thing would be true of females in this life as well. If a man fathers 100 children, hifil imperfect of yalad, the hifil, y-a-l-a-d-h, is causative. The word yalad means to bear or to bring forth. Again, the causative stem here, causes to be born or causes to be brought forth. Hence, they've translated it fathers. 100 children. Feminine singular adjective of me'ah. M-E-apostrophe-A-H. And that word means exactly that. And fathers 100, and they've supplied here, brings forth 100. They've supplied children for the sake of clarity. That is certainly implied here. And lives many years. Cal imperfect, and he will live, literally. It's an imperfect incomplete action, and he will live the to be verb, or literally the to become verb, rather, in the Hebrew. He will become years many. Shana is the word for years. S-H-A-N-A-H. And the feminine plural adjective to go with the feminine plural noun, rav. Again, great, much, or many, translated here in the New American Standard by many. However many they may be, which literally they will become. Days of his years is what you have in the literal Hebrew. And they've translated that just for the sake of smoothness, however long he lives, or how many ever, however many years that may become. Relative particle prefixed here is just a sheen, sh, with the, again, the verb to become, haya. And then, of course, days is yom, of his shana, years. The days of his years, with a feminine noun, plural noun construct with the third masculine singular suffix on shana. But his soul is not satisfied with his prosperity. Now, the New American Standard here has translated this as a plural, good things. And I missed it. Pete pointed it out to me as he looked over the exegesis and pointed out that this is a singular. And it's not focusing so much on the money and the details of life. It's literally his soul. You got a wow here plus the feminine singular noun construct of nephesh, N-E-P-H-E-S-H. His soul is not satisfied. Negative low plus the cal imperfect of savia, S-A-B-H-E-A apostrophe. Savea, actually. Literally, the word means, you know, we know what it means to be full from eating. You eat until you're full, and then hopefully stop there. To be full from nourishment, hence to be satisfied. If he's not satisfied from the source of the goo, that's supposed to be good, not goo. If goo satisfies everybody, obviously. From the source of, preposition men here, out of, the good. Definite article plus the feminine singular noun of tov. And tov kind of looks at the prosperity of a person as an overall picture, not just in terms of money and detail. Certain things in life are viewed as good. For instance, a long life. The ancients certainly considered it a blessing to father many children. This was viewed as a distinct blessing from God, a gift from God, as taught there in one of the Psalms. And so was long life. Long life was considered to be the reward of wisdom. It was considered to be the reward of righteousness. And along with this, of course, came various accoutrement in life, the details, money, wealth, fame, all that. But the good kind of looks at it as a big overall picture, not focusing so much on material things as the things in life that should satisfy a person but don't. And why are people dissatisfied? Well, very often, of course, it's simply because they're pursuing things under the STA. And the STA is never satisfied. It's an empty pit that you can pour all into it you want, and it'll never be satisfied. It'll never be filled up. But his soul is not satisfied, and I changed it to prosperity just simply because it's a single. But I want you to understand, again, we're not talking just material things here. We're talking about all the things in life that would be considered as a part of one's well-being or prosperity. And he does not even have a proper burial. And that's one of the dangers right there. That's a very good point here, that if you don't have the original languages, you're just going to read good things and think he's talking about money and details again, which he's not here. So if he's not satisfied from the source of his good, the good that comes in his life, and does not even have a proper burial. And as a wow here, they've translated the conjunction gan here, also indeed or even. They translated it even here. This would be what we might call the worst case scenario. This is not something that anyone aspired to, certainly in that period of history. And does not even have, and the word here, kavura, means grave or burial place. And so the idea here, Q, That's a Shura, B-H-U-R-A-H. Again, not having a proper burial place translates the way they've translated here, does not have a proper burial. The word proper, again, is supplied as or what we would expect, a normal burial or an expected burial, what people would expect naturally after life was over. Then I say, better the miscarriage than he. I've skipped some of the vocabulary here. And indeed, a burial does not become literally negative low plus the cal perfect of hayah, and did not have, hayah looks more at completed action, did not have a proper burial. I am saying, cal perfect, I said, again, depending upon whether now Solomon is talking in the present tense, or if this is how he looked at it and his comment on it, we might say sort of from the human viewpoint or under the sun. I said, better good is, you got here cal perfect of amer, the simple verb to say, A-M-A-R. Good, feminine, masculine singular adjective rather, of tov. This is another one of his better than sayings that he's going to use throughout this book. There are a lot of them. Better from him, and this is his way of saying better from him, the miscarriage. And then you have the definite article plus this word, nephel. N-E-P-H-E-L. Three times it's used means an aborted birth or a miscarriage. So he says, look, if a guy is to live his whole life, to have all this stuff, great prosperity, sexual prosperity, length of life, and all the things that would go with that, and isn't even recognized at his death, you know, better off not even being born and doing that, he says. Now, again, the question becomes interpretatively here, is Solomon saying this is what I really think, or is this how he looked at it as jaded Solomon, we might say? Is this really true? If life is a gift from God, then a miscarriage would be viewed as a bad thing. But he's saying even this bad thing is superior to the other bad thing. That this is my view on it. For it comes in futility. Verse 4. 4 is a conjunction key here used in an explanatory sense, because or for. In futility is the inseparable preposition bath, plus, again, one of his favorite words in this book, epel. It's our word for vanity, futility, that is used throughout the book. For it comes in vanity or futility. It comes, cal perfect, third masculine singular, a bow, and that word means exactly that, to come, to enter, even can mean to enter something. In darkness, it walks, literally, it will walk. And you've got actually a shift of verb here from the perfect to the imperfect, for it came in futility. It was a waste of time, in other words. And it departed, or it will depart, in darkness. And that's the way they've translated this here. It goes into obscurity. And another inseparable preposition, bait, plus the word koshet, darkness. C-H-O-S-H-E-K. And in darkness it will walk. It departs or it goes. Cal imperfect of halak, the verb to walk. And its name is covered in obscurity. And he leads this off, and by the way, in all three of these phrases, he leads off with his primary thought using the inseparable preposition bait, and then follows it with the verb. In obscurity, again, darkness, is the very same word that we had before, koshek. Its name, the masculine singular noun, construct of shem plus the third masculine singular. Its name is covered in obscurity. Covered in darkness is more literal. The word here is kasa, the verb pu'al, imperfect, K-A-S-A-H. In the pu'al, and this word again is intensive passive, completely covered, completely hidden, or concealed. It never sees the sun, and it never knows anything. It is better off than he. It never sees the sun. Actually, you have also, furthermore, they don't even translate this here, the conjunction gam, also, indeed, or even. Here we might translate it furthermore. Furthermore, the sunlight, Shemesh, sun or sunlight, it does not see. Negative low plus the verb to see again, Raha. The idea here is, of course, focusing first on physical sight. Never has the experience of that, seeing anything. Then to, in a broader sense, to experience it. And it never knows anything. Negative low plus the cal perfect of Yadah. Y-A-D-H-A. It did not know or recognize. Sometimes Yadah is... it is a verb for knowledge, but it also shades sometimes into the idea of recognition or figuring something out. So it never reasoned, again, is the idea here. It never thought through anything. It never recognized anything. It never understood anything. It is better off than he. And what you have in the Hebrew literally here is he leads off with the word rest. Natath. N-A-C-H-A-T-H. 12 times this word means rest, peace, or quietness, or even security. Rest to this one from that one is what you have. And they've translated it. It is better off, but again, the word means there was no turmoil. That's the idea. This guy lived through his entire life of turmoil and ended up, didn't enjoy his prosperity, I guess, doesn't even have a proper burial, isn't recognized, isn't lamented. And they said, better be born than have all that. Or better not to be born. So rest to this one from that one. The miscarriage had literally had more rest because it never existed. That's his whole idea here. His theology is the miscarriage doesn't exist. It wasn't named. That's the whole idea behind the name, is to designate something for what it is. Why didn't it have a name? Because it didn't exist. So even if a man lives 1,000 years twice, by the way, well, I skipped the... You got the inseparable preposition, and then Zeh is repeated, Z-E-H. And when you have a chain of these, like Zeh, the word means this one. It's the near demonstrative. But to this from this might imply that he's talking about the same thing, when in fact, when you have a Zeh and then you'll have another Zeh, it can be translated this and that. It can be translated one and another. It could be translated even first and next, depending if they're looking at a sequence of things. So this word is used in a fairly fluid way. So even if a man lives 1,000 years twice, and nobody ever has, by the way. The oldest man lived to be about 969 years old, and he didn't even live 1,000 years once. So Solomon is obviously, once again, using hyperbole here to get his point across. He's making the point, if a man lives 1,000 years twice and does not enjoy what is good, and as well, here you've got a conjunction, if, or more properly, probably, although, ilu, I-L-U, and actually it's a dot, it says I-L-L-U, there's a dot, a hard doubling dot in there. Although the man becomes 1,000 years twice. And the word man is not here, but clearly that's who he's talking about, is the man back up in verse 3. Any man, of course, becomes or lives, cal perfect of Hayah, if a man lived, even, the word 1,000 is Eleph, E-L-E-P-H, 1,000, and the word Shana, feminine plural noun, years. Lives 1,000 years two times, feminine dual noun here of Pa'am, P-A-A-M. Literally, the word means a foot or a step, and it comes to be used of time. And then here, because it's a dual, which is something kind of unique to the Hebrew, two times. If a man lives 1,000 years two times and does not see good, again, you have the feminine singular noun of Tov looking at his whole prosperity package, whatever that includes. Again, whether it's long life, whether it's many children, whether it's fame, whether it's wealth, maybe it's all of that, and does not see good, does not experience joy in the things in life that he should. Negative low plus the cow perfect of Ra'ah. Do not all go to one place. You got the interrogative particle here, hey, which is used pretty regularly. It's just an H in the Hebrew, H-A actually. And it introduces a question. Negative low, so they supply, they add the word here, do. Do not, negative low, to one place. One place is, to one place is the preposition L, plus the masculine singular noun of Macomb, which means a place, M-A-Q-O-M. And then the masculine singular adjective, echad, which is just means one. And again, this is normal Hebrew word order, the noun followed by the adjective that qualifies it. To one, not to one place, the everyone is walking. The all. Definite article plus the masculine singular noun of kol. And Solomon uses this definite article with kol a lot because he's wanting to include everybody. Nobody is exempt from this. Are not all, and then walking here is a calactic participle of halak, H-A-L-A-K. And maybe even better, are not all proceeding to one place. The active participle emphasizes that it's going on right now. You're headed towards the grave today. You may not feel like it. You may feel, I feel pretty good this morning. Or you may feel like, bring it on. I don't care. But that's where we're all headed. Again, absent any further revelation and absent the rapture, everybody dies. And that's one of the overriding, again, considerations in Solomon's thoughts here as he is older and facing his mortality at some level, obviously, maybe that he hadn't before. And when he faces his, then he comes face to face with the fact that it's true of everybody. Everybody is heading in the same direction. Okay, exposition of verses 3 through 6. 1, Koheleth now isolates on the type of wealthy, the theme of the wealthy type of individual who enjoys sexual prosperity and a long life, but is not able to enjoy it. I should have probably not said enjoys it, but who has it, who experiences it, but doesn't really fully enjoy it. At a certain point, for certain people, continued existence is just a misery. And why is that? Well, two, in verse 3, he shifts from the abundance of wealth, property, and riches to other areas that were considered to be among the great blessings of life, children and a long life. 3, from the Old Testament Jewish perspective, the view was that numerous children and a lengthy life were the rewards of the righteous. Psalm 127, 3 through 5. And he gets into the issue of building a house, but the house is a metaphor for life in general. People can build their lives any way they want. But if God's not in it, if God's not behind it, they're spinning their wheels, they're wasting their time. In verse 1, they labor in vain that build a life, that don't build it if God's not with it. And if God's not protecting it, if the protection isn't there, the watchman keeps awake in vain because calamity will come. It is vain for you to rise up early and to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors. Sounds like Solomon, doesn't it? Well, he wrote this. He wrote this particular psalm. So, sounds very much like what we read in Ecclesiastes. It's kind of a waste of time to do all this. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. And here he uses a somewhat of a military analogy with the idea of the bow and arrow. And that is that at, during the formative years of life, you try to inculcate into your children proper principles and all of that so that they make wise decisions. And as you let them fly, as it were, into life, they hit the target. That's the whole goal. Now, if they miss, that's their, you know, obviously that doesn't, with arrows, you don't have volition with arrows. The arrow doesn't decide where it's going. It goes where the archer aims it. No guarantees as parents. They may not end up where you aimed them, but that's just part of the deal. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. Also, Genesis 33:5. But like all analogies in the Bible, again, the arrow analogy breaks down, because if you are a good archer, the arrow always goes where you aim it. You don't miss. Genesis 33:5. This is where Esau and Jacob are reunited. He lifted up his eyes, and he saw the women and children. And he said, "Who are these with you?" And he said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." And by then, he had obviously a number of children. He had enjoyed a great deal of sexual prosperity. Not all of it, we might say, in the directive will of God, per se. I mean, there was all this rivalry between Rachel and Leah. And in many cases, that's all these children were the results of rivalry among two women and their little games they played. But the fact is, still, this was viewed as a blessing by Jacob here. 48:4, also, same book. And this was one of the things. Sexual prosperity was promised to Abraham as a part of the Abrahamic covenant. And he tells him, even back as far as Genesis 12, that I am going to sexually prosper you. Of course, Abraham's an old man by this time, and the question becomes, how is this going to happen? So that was part of the deal. I'm going to make your descendants more numerous than the sand of the seashore. And Abraham at that point didn't have any descendants and only had one for the rest of his life. So Abraham believed this by faith, of course, and saw it again without fulfillment in his life. He'll see it in his resurrection body. And he said to me, verse 4 here, "Behold, I will make you fruitful and numerous, and I will give this land, and I will make you a company of peoples. And I will give this land to your descendants after you for an everlasting possession." And again, this was a part of God's blessing here in Jacob's life as he's facing the end of life now, but rehearsing God's promises and what he's done in the course of all this. Deuteronomy 7:13. This is a blessing for obedience in verse 12. "If you listen to these judgments and keep and do them, the Lord your God will keep with you his covenant and his loving kindness. He will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your ground, your grain, your new wine, your oil, the increase of your herd and flock." Sexual prosperity, even among the animals, is viewed as a part of his blessing. "In the land which he swore to your forefathers to give you." And Deuteronomy 28:4. So again, this is viewed as a reward of obedience and a reward of God. "Blessed shall be the offspring of your body." Again, this is contingent upon all these blessings, verse 2, "will come upon you and overtake you if you obey the Lord your God." In other words, I will pursue you with blessing. You don't have to pursue it. When people are pursuing things, it's generally because they're pursuing it under their STA. They're not waiting on God. "Blessed will be the offspring of your body and the produce of your ground and the offspring of your beast, the increase of your herd and the young of your flock." And there are other blessings here clearly associated with all this, with obedience. Well, four, many children were viewed as a proof of God's blessing. Koheleth uses the round figure 100. It would probably not very be likely that a man could father 100 children in a lifetime, particularly given that the average life expectancy was still only about 70 years. And that life expectancy was fixed pretty much from the time of the flood forward. Again, you have these horrific life, well, I say horrific, exceedingly long life expectancies before the flood, and lifetimes and all of that. And then at the flood, I mean, there's exceptions to it, but it drops off pretty dramatically down to about 70 years pretty fast. And you can chart this in the some people have done it and all, and see a chart of the lifespan, life expectancies. Well, when the vapor canopy was taken out at the flood, then the sun's radiation and all of that began to have an adverse impact on mankind, as it still does. And we know this is what shortened life expectancies pretty simply was, the radiation factor. And we know that radiation's not good for you. So again, this got down to 70 years, and when Moses writes in 1445 B.C., he recognized it was 70 years. Said some people live longer by virtue of strength, maybe, but 70 years is the average. You're 70. So in 70 years, it'd be pretty hard to father 100 children. Jacob had a lot of kids, and there's no indication that he had near that many. But he had, you know, he had a lot of children. So he uses the figure 100 as a round figure, again, to denote great sexual prosperity. And again, typically, if we deal with numbers in the Bible, which we have to, unless something forces you to, you would take it as literal. But how many people do you know that have ever fathered 100 children? I've never heard of anybody that lives, you know, a normal 70-year lifespan. So five, long life was also considered to be another of the great blessings of God, an area of prosperity to which men normally aspired. Deuteronomy 11:21. People tend to, if they have the choice, would you rather live today or die? Most people want to stay alive. And when you're not facing life or death necessarily straight in the face, when you do face death straight in the face, you'll realize you want to be alive, that you do want to live. Deuteronomy 11:21. So the days you write these, again, you impress these words on your heart, and teach them to your children, verse 19, so that your days and the days of your sons will be multiplied on the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give them, as long as the heavens remain above the earth. The multiplication of days, again, is viewed as a positive blessing for obedience. 1 Samuel 25:6. And because it was recognized as a gift of God, a blessing of God, an area of prosperity. Here's a deal where people wish it upon one another. You know, rather than wishing them dead, they wish them long life. And thus you shall say, have a long life. Peace be to you, and peace be to your house, and peace be to all that you have. And so here, again, this is a wish in this context, but it's recognized that people would want this. 1 Kings 3:11. And here in the life of Solomon, as he has been blessed by God with this choice of asking anything he wants in life, and Solomon asked for the right thing. He asked for the ability to be a wise ruler and a good judge. Didn't ask for wealth, didn't ask for fame, didn't ask for the death of his enemies. Didn't ask for all that, the things he could have asked for. Asked for the thing that mattered, he asked for wisdom. Recognized his shortcomings and prayed for what was really valuable. Verse 9, give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil, for who is able to judge this great people of yours? Again, in the Oriental Kingdom, we did not have a separation of powers as we do in our country. There was not a separate judicial system. The king was the judge, the ultimate judge. He was the Supreme Court, we might say. He was also the king, so his word was final, too. There was no appeal of his judgment. And so Solomon recognized this is an awesome responsibility. And Solomon is not, you know, real old at this point. So it was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said to him, because you have asked this thing, have not asked for yourself long life. See, that would be the first blessing. Okay, let me live a long time. nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have you asked for the life of your enemies. But you have asked for yourself discernment to understand justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. I have given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has been no one like you before you, nor shall one like you arise after you. And I also have given you, by the way, because you asked for the right thing and you pursued what's really important to God's heart, I've also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that you will not be like any of the kings, so that there will not be any among the kings like you all your days. Nobody is going to be able to touch you in terms of material prosperity. I'd be thinking, I'm glad I asked for the right thing. Psalm 91:16. So Solomon gets, and this is again the idea of physical prosperity, stems from the idea, biblically at least, stems from the idea of obedience to God and orientation to his wisdom, rather than from the pursuit of things like that. Psalm 91:16. With a long life I will satisfy him, and will let him see my salvation. Again, length of days and a long life are mentioned enough in here to help you. Hopefully, right, you'll recognize that, you know, this is considered a blessing in people's lives. Proverbs 3:16 is the last one. So a normal long life, okay, so let's see, how long do you want to live? Well, the older you get, probably the longer you want to live. You know, people don't hit retirement age, whatever it is now, 62 or whatever, and say, okay, I'm ready, go buy me a casket. Then they're thinking 70's not that old, or 80. And so, again, there comes a point at which, obviously, life can become a burden if you're not healthy and you don't have certain factors going for you and God's not blessing you. But in the normal course of things, long life, again, was viewed as a great blessing, a blessing from God, and a form of prosperity. Proverbs 3:16, here comes from wisdom, long life is in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honor. And all her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. So you have, again, material prosperity, length of life, overt prosperity, and then even internal prosperity. Peace and contentment and all those factors that go into making a happy life. Well, 6, he will once again use a round number in verse 6. Both figures are examples of hyperbole. To denote that one that lives what would be considered multiple lifetimes. And again, I don't see these as being real numbers. We don't know of anybody that's lived 2,000 years. We don't know of anybody that's even lived 1,000. Even under the ideal circumstances before the flood. And even in the ideal circumstances, it already had an issue introduced into it, and that was the genetic sin nature and the curse placed on the planet. So it wasn't really, quote, even ideal then. But we do know that with the change of these things, for instance, in the millennium, and we don't know what all changes the world's going to undergo. I mean, we looked in the book of Revelation, you see the sun's going to scorch men with fire, then it's apparently going to go dark. There are going to be material changes in the universe, and apparently it's lit back up for the millennium, but some obvious changes are introduced. Animals lose their ferocity. A nursing child can play at the hole of the cobra. I wouldn't recommend it now. And lions are going to eat grass rather than be meat eaters. But the person who doesn't live to be 100 is going to be thought cursed by God. So life expectancy is going to increase once again. And we're not told what it'll increase to, but 100 would be considered an early death during the millennium. So if you only see 10% of the millennium, people are going to think, well, you weren't too righteous. So that's going to change again. We don't know exactly how much, but we do know that even then, they're not going to live thousands of years, it doesn't appear. I don't know that there's nothing we could glean from the scripture, certainly that I've ever been able to see, that would suggest that somebody survives the entire millennium. I mean, they might, but I don't know that you could prove it. 7 here, Koheleth expresses the long life of man in emphatic terms, as he emphasizes the actual number of days in the years of his life. Genesis 25:7, where a similar idea is used. You have, well, I say similar, it's identical. These are all the days of the years of Abraham's life. To emphasize that life is composed not only of years, but of course of the days that make up those years. And Abraham was one of the exceptions after the flood. He lived 175 years, which was a long time considering the average life expectancy. He was, again, down to about 70 by then. So he lived an excessively long life, and in Jewish lore and understanding of this, this is viewed as God's blessing on him for his righteousness. The father of the Jews is recognized as one of the most righteous people, and they refer to him regularly, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Psalm 90:10, now this is the psalm that Moses wrote, so it has to be dated no later than 1400 B.C. or about 1405, because that was the time of the conquest, and Moses died prior to that. And Moses was another exception to the rule. Moses lived to be 120, which was considered a long life in that time. Psalm 90:10. As for the days of our life, they contain 70 years, or, if due to strength, 80 years. Yet their pride is but labor and sorrow, for soon it is gone and we fly away. And Moses recognizes here, as Solomon does, the transience of life, that it goes by very quickly. And that people, if they aren't spending their time wisely, are wasting their life at that level. So 8 here, his point is that no matter how much sexual prosperity one enjoys, no matter how many years he may live, if a man cannot enjoy what he has, he is better off never to have had it in the first place. And this is not a refrain that has not been echoed in human history. This is not a sentiment that's unheard of. You're better off not having had it than to not be able to enjoy it, or to have it and to lose it. So this is not, again, an uncommon thought among human beings. Some people just don't seem to be able to get it. And again, the question would have to be, the underlying question would be, why? And I believe the underlying answer is orientation to God and his plan and his doctrine. If that's not there, if that's lacking, if the applications are not forthcoming and all that, the capacity for life is just not there. So 9, the Hebrew idiom to satisfy the soul has the nuance of experiencing something that provides the sense of contentment and completion that human beings often seek. And that has to come, again, from within. People are constantly searching for satisfaction and happiness outside of themselves. And that's not where it's found. It's just not found there. There's nothing in this world that you can get that's going to satisfy you ultimately. The satisfaction, the inner contentment, as Paul says, is something that has to be learned. People aren't born with this. And you can see this, obviously, if you deal with small children, you can see this. They're not content. They're not satisfied. They're always pursuing something. They're not generally content just to sit there. They got to be busy. They got to be into something. What are they seeking? Well, they're seeking some sort of sense, probably, of contentment, satisfaction, of fulfillment. Even at that age, they're looking for it. And as you get older, then it gets worse. Because as you get older, you become more keenly aware that it's not there. And if it's not there, then what's the problem? You know, the question, again, Paul says this has to be learned. I have learned to be content in whatever situation I find myself, whether it's great prosperity or great adversity. I can live through it. I can get through it. I can handle it with doctrine. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And yet people continue to pursue satisfaction outside their niche, outside their life sometimes. And it doesn't come. And it never will. Because, again, there's nothing. Today, I guarantee you, every football player that's playing in that game today wants to win. They want to be Super Bowl champions. And they think, some of them, I'm sure, think, if I just get that ring, that'll fulfill my life. This will make it all worthwhile. And, you know, well, ask OJ. Did it? Nope. Sure doesn't. And then, you know, then of course there's extra, the money that goes with it. They get paid extra if they win. There's the fame that goes with it. The parades and how wonderful you are. People patting you on the back and, you know, trying to live vicariously through your victory. That's another whole thing. People often seek satisfaction by trying to live vicariously. And that doesn't work. I've watched moms do this for years, trying to live lives through their children. I'm not saying dads never do it, you know, pushing the kid out to play baseball and making him do all that because it fulfills some need you have. That's not good either. That doesn't work. So where is, again, satisfaction to be found? Where is contentment to be found? 10, the verse, the good here, rather, in this context, is not used in a moral sense. It is used to denote the specific blessings of long life and sexual prosperity in this context. Now, there may be things that go with that. Again, fame, money, all that may go with long life and sexual prosperity. One would assume this isn't a poor person if he's fathered 100 children. Somebody's got to take care of him. Or maybe he is a poor person because he fathered 100 children. Who knows? But again, here, the good is not good in a moral sense. It's not, you know, i.e. good from evil. 11, the term nephesh soul is used four times in verses 2 through 9. And it refers to the immaterial part of man that has the capacity to enjoy satisfaction and contentment. And again, what's the enemy of contentment? The STA is the enemy of contentment. The STA will never be satisfied. It's never content. Again, I can't express it any better than they did in that movie Wall Street. How much is enough? It's never enough. The STA looks at life just like that. No matter what you have, it's never enough. And so the immaterial part of man has this ability to have satisfaction. These are intangible qualities. And real intangible in our world because most people don't have them. And they're constantly trying to manipulate their niche. Constantly trying to find that which is going to satisfy them. And it's... we'll tell you, it's not out there. 12, although a man may prosper in the financial realm, enjoy great sexual prosperity, and live several lifetimes, he may not have the capacity to experience the contentment and satisfaction that truly makes life worthwhile. And on the surface, one might say, well, if you could live a long life and had a lot of children and, you know, were honored at your burial and all this, this was a life worth living. Well, but if you didn't enjoy it, is it? If you didn't enjoy it, it's not worth living. And where does enjoyment come from? Again, my contention is it comes from the Lord. It doesn't come from as a part of us. It comes from resident doctrine and resident application. You can't just have the doctrine, as James will point out in his book. Don't delude yourself into being hearers only and not doers. Because if you're a hearer only and not a doer, you've deceived yourself. Well, 13, one of the chief difficulties of verse 3 is how one is to understand the phrase, and he does not have a proper burial. 14, some seek to identify the third person singular suffix on the inseparable preposition lamed with the stillborn. But one of the problems is the stillborn has not been introduced at this point in the construction. So they're saying, well, okay, this refers to something he hasn't even introduced yet. Which typically, that's not how, you know, these pronouns are used. This suffix here would most naturally refer to the man who fathers 100 children. And he does not have a proper burial. Because he's going to make a comparison here in one of his better than sayings with the miscarriage. But the miscarriage hasn't been introduced. So grammatically, one would have to understand... I think the man who doesn't is the guy who's lived a long life, has lots of children, all that. Well, why don't his children provide him a proper burial? That's normal. You'd expect it. But they apparently don't. So 15, while we would not argue the isagogic fact that the miscarriage or stillborn was generally not given a normal burial. In fact, they often were not buried at all. So 16, however, to apply the third person suffix to a subject that has not appeared in the text is grammatically tenuous at best. So again, the conjunction gam here, point 17, which again can, in this case, and does not even have a proper burial, they've translated it there in an offensive sense. That this is kind of the worst case, this is the worst case scenario, this is the worst part of all this, is that He lived all his life unsatisfied and then didn't even get a proper burial on top of it, which would be, we might say, you know, the icing on the cake. This is the worst part of it. So again, the conjunction gam appears to be used to continue the discussion of the man that had prosperity, sexual blessing, or lived a long life. Or maybe had all those even. You know, could have had all three. So grammatically, I don't see any way you can go with this other than the way it's translated by the New American Standard. And the he has to refer to the man who fathers 100 children. And in all of this, he ends up, you know, at the end of it all, not only with less than nothing, he isn't even properly lamented. And one would assume, you know, again, that this would be what one would expect. Well, 18, this would fall under the ascensive use of the term, which now introduces what might be considered the ultimate vanity. The ultimate fruitless endeavor in life. You live all your life, you have all this, you don't have any capacity for it, and then you die. It's bad enough to go through it and have capacity for it and then die, I suppose. But to not have capacity and then die. So this would be the ultimate vanity for the prosperous man who appeared to have everything. I mean, from the human viewpoint, people probably look at this guy and say, hey, this guy's got a great life. But see, they can't see into his soul. They can't see his lack of contentment. They can't see his lack of capacity. They can't. That's something that they can't see. 19, the phrase may be understood in two ways. The first way in which one may understand this phrase is to take it literally, that a burial never occurs for him. He essentially lives on in his misery. Now, that's how some have attempted to translate this. I still would tend to go with the New American Standard here, where they have supplied proper burial. But we recognize the feminine singular noun, kavura there, can mean grave or burial place. They suggest that this is to not have a burial place is to not be properly buried. And that's the way I would see it as well here. I don't think he's saying that he lives on and he's just miserable in all this, although, you know, that would be bad enough. But 20, the second, the most likely sense, is the wealthy man did not receive what would be considered a customary burial, which was considered of great importance in many ancient cultures. 21, this idea prevailed widely in the Greek culture. And it was not like it was unusual for the Hebrews. Abraham made certain, if you remember, when Sarah died, that was the only plot of land that he ever owned in all of Canaan, even though he's been promised by God that he and his descendants would have this land in perpetuity. And Abraham lived in that land, and how much of it did he possess? None. So Abraham died in faith, as recorded there in Hebrews 11. And the part he did possess, he had to buy, and the part he bought was a burial plot. And that's all it was used for. So Abraham assumed, of course, as Sarah died, the first thing he set about to do was to provide her a proper burial. That was the first order of business. And that was, again, when he first purchased this land in Canaan, part of his little plot there. So 21, the idea prevailed widely in the Greek culture. In fact, much of the plot of Antigone, which was written by Sophocles, concerns the fact that one man is buried properly and honored as a hero, while another is left to rot and to be eaten by dogs in disgrace. And this was considered, again, to not be buried properly, an ultimate disgrace, if you go back and you review in the life of Jezebel there, in her career. What was it was told her? They're going to throw her down off the wall, and she's going to be eaten by the dogs. This was viewed as the ultimate humiliation. The ultimate, the final stamp of God's disapproval, we might say, on her. And again, this is not something that is not taught throughout other cultures or recognized throughout other cultures. 22, in Jewish culture, if a man was not buried properly, it was looked upon as something deeply humiliating. Further, it was something one would normally seek to avoid. 1 Kings 21, 23. And what we see clearly, say, in the life there of the guy that provided Jesus' grave, he'd clearly bought a grave for himself and planned ahead. So this was something that they gave some thought to. 1 Kings 21:23. But if you're a believer, of course, you're only renting a grave anyway. I don't think they allow you to rent them, but hey, could I rent a burial plot? I only need it for like 5 years. You know. And, I learned something new when I was in there in Oklahoma for the funeral. You know, some of them are, you know, one of the ways to save money is you buy one burial plot and you stack the coffins on top of each other. I didn't know you could do that, but apparently you can. So that's a way to save money, too, if you're planning for the future. 1 Kings 21:23, of Jezebel also the Lord has spoken, saying, the dogs will eat Jezebel in the district of Jezreel. The one belonging to Ahab who dies in the city, the dogs will eat. And the one who dies in the field, the birds of heaven will surely eat. And this is all viewed as a judgment on the evil lifestyle that Ahab and Jezebel lived. Surely, verse 25, there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do evil in the sight of the Lord, because Jezebel, his wife, incited him. He acted very abominably in following idols, according to all that the Ammonites had done, whom the Lord had cast out before the sons of Israel. And so if you get into the history of why the Jews should have Canaan in the first place. Number one, these indigenous peoples that were there were horrible people. And they were a blight on the earth. And God didn't just arbitrarily take them out and give the land to Israel. It was done as a factor of his righteousness and of a judgment on these people, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, the Amorite, the Jebusite, and all that. That these were God-awful people, that were the world was better off without them. And God has given the Jews that land in perpetuity. And the God-awful people that are trying to take it away from them right now and withstanding all this are demonstrating their evil as well in all of this. Their anti-Semitism and their failure to understand the Bible. Of course, you just rewrite it in the form of the Quran and you read it a little different. And then God hasn't given this land to the Jews. Well, yeah, he has. So our time's up. Let's stop there. We'll pick up here with 2 Kings in our second session.